Welcome back to the Movie Draft House.
Mark wants to break up with me. Can you believe this?
I'm your host, Mark. That's your co-host, Jeff.
Hi. We're having a little off-pod drama.
No, it's no. There's no drama.
Off-pod drama, Mark. I sent him some music for another project, and he's like, "Why don't you make cool shit for our pod?" And I said,
"No. Let's call. All right, let's call it how it is. All right,
okay,
Eric, if you're listening,
hey Eric, how's
it
going?
You've got coolest shit music for your podcast. Jeff clearly is the creative outlet and lets it juices flow on upcoming M. Night Shyamalan chronologically.
Yeah.
And was that out there?
Yes.
Was the okay?
The theme's not out there, but that we're doing Shyamalan. Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. I almost had to start over. Anyways, I told Jeff.
I don't make cool shit.
That's cool as fuck, and it had me thinking that maybe Jeff doesn't like the Draft House as much as he likes chronologically. I don't know,
huh?
Because
it's interesting. Let me ask you, because this has been a long underlying thing between us since the beginning. Oh, since I started doing Spielberg, you felt this way. Go to the back catalog. So let me ask you a question. How many episodes of Spielberg come out in a month?
Four?
No.
Two. No, I don't know, man.
Exactly.
Every Wednesday I get a new Spielberg episode.
That is false.
Every Wednesday.
No, it's not. All the times you come back and be like, how come there wasn't a new episode?
Oh, I'm sorry for listening to your podcast,
Jeff. I'm not sorry that you listen. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is the Draft House is a weekly podcast. I'm here every week. With you.
This is true. This
chronologically
you are spitting facts.
Not a weekly podcast. And this is the last time we'll have this conversation. Do not question my dedication to any of my projects. Especially one we've been doing for 2 years. We haven't missed a week yet.
It's great.
I'm on equipment. I go over to your house and we record together. I don't know what else to tell you. I can't make you feel any more secure
in
our podcast relationship.
No, I feel very
secure.
I'm not
going to put a ring on it,
though. I'm just right. That's the problem. There it is.
What? That I can't
see
other podcasters?
I'm dedicated, but I don't want to be so dedicated.
What? I want to make a podcast with you.
I want to see other podcasts.
Yes, that is true. I'm a polygamous podcaster. What's our music this week?
I got new wall art. It's staring at me right now.
I can't wait to see it in 2 weeks.
It's great. Anyways, music this week is because if you don't recall, we're doing a new music for every new theme during the month of July.
Yeah, it's an idea I had, remember? Because I sit around and I think about our podcast when we're not recording it.
I know.
And I sent you a theme the other day.
It's kind of...
Didn't I? I said, hey, how do you think about this theme? You know why? Because when we're not recording and we're not watching a boot, I'm thinking about things for the pod. Anyway. Who's the music by? Mason
Pace? I love it. The music this week is brought to you by the heavy metal rock band... Woo. Mason Pace, with their song "Mr. Van Gogh," you can find Mason Pace Band's music wherever you find your music from, or you can hit the show notes provided in the links. Hit the show note for all the links for
there
all the
go.
Things. Jeff, I assure you, I think you're gonna like this song a lot.
Sweet. I hope so.
I think it's going to be the thing that brings you back to Mason Pace.
Great. I am looking forward to it. But the thing is I won't hear it until it releases. So that's kind of fun, actually. That's nice. I like that.
Yeah. Jeff.
Hey.
I love you.
I love you too. And I do like doing the pod with you.
I'm glad we got our drama out of the way.
Yeah, we have drama most of the time. It's around, Uncut Gems. go to the back catalog. But we're not talking about Uncut Gems. What was our theme this week, Mark?
The theme this week was Western.
Now, all right, let's go ahead and get contentious again. Honeymoon's right, over, baby. And while I am not saying that this is not a Western, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying
you can't
that.
Say it.
I could.
You can't. You can't.
I could. I could say
You'd
it.
You'd be wrong.
I could
You'd
say it. Don't challenge me.
Yeah.
Listen
physically,
to what,
out coming out of your mouth, you could say it. Yeah,
you're right.
You'd be wrong.
That's right. So, while I'm not saying that, every single Western you've picked, 100% of three, we've had a sample size of three, have had automobiles in it. All of them.
Okay.
Power of the Dog, that one that's not a Western, and this. I don't know how you
created your own rules for Westerns.
No, I didn't. These rules are well established. Go check out the episode of, what was the one you made? Not Hell or High Water. What, was it Hell or High Water?
Hell or High Water is the one you hated because it didn't,
I didn't
fit
hate
the Western
it. It's just not
category.
A Western. Anyway, so what you picked, There Will Be Blood from 2007. It's rated R. And it stars Paul Dano, Daniel Day-Lewis, and
Kieran Hines.
Kieran Hines. Kieran Hines. Thank you very much. I should have known that because he was in a Spielberg movie called Munich. But I didn't remember, and here we are. So, Mark, why There Will Be Blood?
So, I haven't seen... I vaguely remember seeing There Will Be Blood when it came out, 2007, is because I remember the mid-2000s being when I first started really, like, getting into, like, films that were award worthy.
I guess.
And, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis, probably on the Rushmore of actors of all time, I would say. I mean, that's hard to quantify because...
Maybe he'd be on your Mount Rushmore.
Sure, but, like, he is an actor that he doesn't have a ton of films.
Yeah.
And he seems to be very, like, here lately, he's only done a film, like, once every 5 years. But back in 2007, I'd only seen him in The Last of Mohicans, which he's probably most well-known for, or was most well-known for, and then as the butcher in The Gangs of New York, as the villain in that film.
Yeah.
And I remember being, like, awestruck when I saw The Gangs of New York. That's a great fucking movie.
Is that Scorsese?
It is a Scorsese film. Okay. So you probably haven't seen it.
You are correct, sir.
Okay.
No, I have not watched it.
But
I only watched Silence.
Oh yeah, that wasn't a good one either.
Nope.
No, you have. And you watched what's the other one? Nick Cage one.
No, I've Ambulance seen movie. Several Scorsese. Oh. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I didn't know that, like, Daniel Day-Lewis was Last Mohicans. It just never clicked for me.
Yeah, that's the first. I mean, I remember. I think my mom and dad took me to see that in the theater.
Really?
I don't even remember. Yeah, that could be wrong. I could be misremembering, but I remember seeing that movie in a movie theater. But here in There Will Be Blood, I just remember there being a lot of buzz about this film, and so I watched it, and I did not remember a lot about this movie watching it. This is my second time. And so in this watch, so based on my first watch, or my memory of my first watch, I remembered enjoying it a lot. Just performance, you know, atmosphere of the film, setting, all that. I just remember, you know, thinking, hey, that's a good film. And then I watched it this time. And that's my history with it. What about you?
None whatsoever. I've been meaning to watch it for a while because I do like Westerns. And I'm familiar with Daniel Day-Lewis's pedigree, and I'm a Paul Dano fan. I do enjoy his, but it just never got around to it because it's 2.5 hours. You know, I'm generally speaking, you know, that's not my favorite thing to do.
Right.
It should be, though. It's weird. I don't know. Sometimes it's good. But no, I had actually started this before you drafted it, like a couple of days before, and I got like 10 minutes in and I had to go do something else. So that's about it. I thought there would be more blood in this movie. That's for sure. With the name promising you like blood, there is some, but I really thought this was just going to be like,
it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor.
But what does he never says it? He just
no. But I think I interpret the title of the film. There will be blood. As oil. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis is an oil tycoon, and he literally will do anything for oil, and like the film establishes that, and so. I think the title is a playoff of his, you know, cutthroatness of as an oil tycoon.
Yeah.
And so this watch for me was hard. You know, the first 15 minutes I clocked it. The first 15 minutes of the film, there's no dialogue.
No dialogue, yeah.
And I think that put a bit of a sour taste is because it's nothing. It's Daniel Plainview. That's the character that Daniel Day-Lewis plays. Chopping up ground, striking oil for the first time, I think. And it's just, and then he falls into a hole and breaks his leg, and then he climbs out of it. And I was like, damn, I looked at the phone to see how long it had been with that since I started the film. And it was 15 minutes and no dialogue had been said. And I said, this is fucking weird. It's because it's not like it was riveting cinema going on in those first 15.
I don't get the point of the opening scene because I guess maybe it's to show you his determination, right? So he finds silver or gold or whatever down in this mine, but we're presumed that maybe he broke his leg and he essentially crawls on his back all the way back to his main base where they take care of him. But that's the kind of guy we're dealing with. This is a guy who is not going to be deterred no matter what. But him finding that silver really didn't play into anything. But then it kind of jump cuts to him being this oil baron.
So then the film does a really weird bit of storytelling, and we see Daniel Day-Lewis's character, and this has got to be some years later, sitting down with Paul Dano's character,
right?
And they're talking about, Dano's character selling land to Daniel Plainview to drill for oil. And I remember watching, I was like, damn. All right. I said, okay, that's a bit of foreshadowing. All right, good. Cool. And then it jumps back. So the film never establishes really the timeline here,
but it doesn't jump back.
Right. Yeah. And so, spoiler alert, the film, by the end of the film, you're clued in that Paul Dano is playing two characters, twin brothers.
Yeah, they kind of.
And I don't get the point of not establishing that from the beginning, that Paul Dano is brothers.
They introduce the first Paul Dano we see is Paul, and he's the guy who is, essentially, he doesn't even sell it. He sells information. He says, this is a really oil-rich place up here. Give me, what do you say, $5,000, which I did some calculations, ends up being like 380-something thousand in today's money. and you can have the info. And he just kind of works Daniel Day-Lewis to get the money he wants. And Daniel Day-Lewis accepts because, you know, at the end of the day, Daniel Day-Lewis says, hey, if I don't find what's up there, I'm going to come and get my money back. And there's
right.
a very heavy threat to it. But then he yeah. gets to the property, and the Sunday family is there. Old Man Sunday and Paul Dano is there as the son. No, excuse me.
As the other as Eli. Brother.
Right, he's Eli.
Yeah.
And so Paul Dano comes up, and I'm like, oh, he's here. But then he acts like he doesn't know them. And I'm like,
right.
what? And then he's like, my name's Eli. And then they shake hands and move on. And Daniel Day-Lewis doesn't question it. And I guess we're not supposed to. And it felt weird.
It's weird. It's
in that opening scene,
weird.
Did I miss something? Did he say, no. I have a twin brother?
No, no. And that's the issue. Like, that's why I guess this second watch, because I didn't remember any of this from the first time I saw it. I had such a bad taste in my mouth, not because the performances are bad. The performances are great throughout. It's the way the story's told that I'm just like, all right, a 2.5 hour movie, and you start it this way, and you end it the way it ends, and we don't get any of those thread connections at all in that 2.5 hours. And I just don't understand the way that, like, Paul Thomas Anderson tells the story the way he does. And from what I understand, or from what I've read, the film is based on a book.
Great. Like, I don't know. So you brought his name up, Paul Thomas Anderson. How do you feel about this guy? Cause I've seen a handful of his films, namely Boogie Nights, but I haven't seen much else, I don't think.
I mean, he's
Punch Drunk Love, right?
I've seen most of his filmography. He's well established. He has his most recent Licorice Pizza was not good, but
it was nominated for everything.
It was, and he's a weird storyteller. You know, like that film, Licorice Pizza, got a lot of blowback because it, like, kind of celebrates an adult having a, you know, sexual fantasy with a child. But
that seems fair to want to be upset about that. I mean,
but I mean, for the most part, he's and he cut his teeth in music video directing. But he's directed a lot of really good films: Inherent Vice, The Master, Punch Drunk Love.
I've not seen any of these.
You haven't seen Punch Drunk Love?
Fuck no.
Okay, Magnolia, another good one.
I haven't seen it.
And then Boogie Nights.
Got one.
And I haven't seen Heart Eight, but
and I'll tell you why I haven't seen anything else, because I don't like Boogie Nights. Everybody loves Boogie Nights.
I haven't seen Boogie Nights.
You've never seen Boogie Nights. Okay.
No, I've never seen Boogie
Nights. Fair enough. Okay. Thanks for... Now I know why you're not taking out not out on me for not seeing this crap. Because you haven't seen Boogie Nights.
But, so, Paul Thomas Anderson, the director, he is a... He's a very visual storyteller. And you can tell this from watching There Will Be Blood. The cinematography is great in this film. A lot of wide shots, a lot of silhouette shots, a lot of just outlined things in the distance shot. You know, just good cinematography. And I think that just a lot of it gets lost in the way the story is told. It's because Daniel Plainview is not a good dude. He's our main character. We spend 95% of the film with him.
Yeah.
And he is, there's a couple scenes between him and his stolen child son, where I'm like, oh, maybe he does really care for this dude. And then the film just shits all over that relationship, probably on purpose, but, I just he's a character that's hard to get behind.
Who's that? Dano?
No. Daniel Plainview.
Okay.
Yeah. He's your main character.
Like initially he at least has like some likable things. Like initially it seems like he cares about his workers, right? You know, initially yeah. It seems like he has a lot of affection and love for his son. You know, all of those things. But as soon as anything gets in the way of him pursuing these goals for oil, so he is just a determined person. No matter what, he's going to get what he wants, even if he has to sacrifice everything. And then he's also playing opposite Eli, who's the same.
Yeah, they're both snake oil salesmen.
They both have very different goals, and they're selling very different things. There are really good parts of this movie. There is a moment that I think probably my favorite part of this movie is when Daniel Plainview is trying to get a pipeline through another piece of property. And he's the whole time, Paul Dano has started this church and it's gaining ground and he's making money. And they show you he's very much a faith healer style person and all the sort of
shit. Well, he's a showman.
He's a showman for sure.
And a
really great scene, but also cringy. But that sort of thing is cringy, right, in real life. So I was fine with it. But he, you know, he's got one of the guys, the guy that owns the property that Daniel Day-Lewis wants to put his pipe through, is one of the churchgoers to Eli's church. And so normally Daniel Day-Lewis is able to get whatever he wants with money. But then he runs into the thing that he can't buy, and he can't buy it because of faith. And right. So both of these guys have power over the people in this town that has built up around this well. And I really just liked that juxtaposition of this guy's got money. He can control everything. Well, maybe not everything. And it just kind of shows you how strong faith can be and, you know, how far money will get you and how the two things, even though the leader of the church is into money and he's getting money and he's rich, and you find out later that when the money's all gone, he's not quite the man of faith he seems to be.
Right.
But at the same time, it just kind of shows you the people who actually earnestly believe the things, how they can't be bought by money and things like that. So that was my favorite section of the movie. But like you said, a lot of it is just watching him dig for oil and make deals. And
I think the biggest draw, I won't say the biggest, one of the main draws to this film is the child actor who plays Plainview's son, HW.
Right. Which I should have named
is fantastic.
My kid, two initials. How good of a name is HW?
No, HW. HW is so fantastic.
Badass. I'm going to get a cat.
Right?
My next cat's going to be called HW.
I mean, it's just awesome. It rolls off the tongue. It sounds proper.
And when he has his accent that Daniel Day-Lewis is doing, HW, help him out. It's great. I love the name HW.
But the child actor that plays HW is fantastic.
Fully agree.
He doesn't get a ton of lines, but a lot of the acting he does is done through just sounds. It's because early on in the film, an explosion happens at one of the oil rigs, and HW is very close by. It explodes. He loses his hearing.
Right.
He becomes deaf. Or not deaf. Yeah, deaf.
Yeah.
And at this moment, and so when this happens, you see Daniel Day-Lewis's character just run like frantic to get to the son. And it's not even his natural child. It's, you know, a kid that he has sort of just adopted.
Wait,
and we later find out
like how did that happen?
Well, I mean, the guy died in the well, or the pit, and he's like, oh, this kid needs a father. I'll just scoop him right up.
Oh, so he adopted one of his worker's kids when the worker died?
Yeah, the worker that died, yeah.
Oh,
well,
I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, the worker that died, he was like, because right after the guy gets hit in the head with the pipe and dies, you know, the camera cuts to this baby, and Daniel Day-Lewis scoops him up. So, like, I don't know if that's actual facts of, you know, hey, this was this guy's kid, but the movie later then clues us in that, hey, I just picked you up off the streets because you helped me, you know.
Yeah,
because
HW believes the whole time that it's his son, but there is a connection there to a degree, right? So that arc is really interesting. So they kind of show you. He uses HW initially to be like, it's a family business. I run it with my son, HW, which kind of makes him more trustworthy, right? You know, my son is here. He's helping me. And it just gives you a good image of, we can trust this oil baron. And, you know, when his son is deaf and, you know, he can know about that time, actually, his brother comes back, Daniel Day-Lewis's brother.
Stepbrother.
Stepbrother. No, half-brother.
Yeah.
Half-brother.
Half-brother, you're right.
And he's like, oh. And so he starts using his half-brother as that part of the family business. And he sends his son off now because he doesn't want to deal with him because he's deaf.
Right.
And then he finds out that his brother is a shyster and lying.
Right.
And so he sends him, he kills him, right?
No, he kills him,
right,
yeah.
He kills him. And then he brings his son back. But so there's another great scene is when Daniel Day-Lewis is trying to get the that pipeline done, and the guy's like, you need to come to our church. All right, fine.
Right.
So he's in church, and then, of course, Eli pegs on him right away, brings him up, you know, and then makes him repeat over and over, I've abandoned my son. I've abandoned my son. And it's something it's hard for him to say because there's shame around it for him, right?
Yeah.
And he has this really great scene where he keeps saying it, and every time he says it, it gets more and more real. And at some point, he breaks. And then he starts admitting to the fact, this truth behind the fact that he's abandoned his son. And you could see some relief in that. Like, it's a really effective scene that, it's kind of like use a psychology of like talking out loud. So much of therapy is saying out loud these things and putting them out there. And it's kind of like one of the reasons like you ever like you feel good, you're fine. And then you're talking to someone about something that's been difficult and then you start to cry. It's kind of that thing. Really great scene. And after that scene, that's when he brings his son back. And I think that's a truly repentant moment for him. Like, I think in that moment, he's trying to get his son back because he feels bad for what he's done.
Well, and that's the scene, you know, the scene immediately following that is him taking, they're out in the field somewhere. And, you know, he takes HW and he kind of gets on one knee and he's like, HW, I've missed you. And his son just like slaps the shit out of him,
right?
Or you know, beats him, and like it's one of the most gut wrenching scenes is because the child that is this actor, he's not saying anything. He's portraying all of his emotion through like body movements.
Yeah,
and so, I did enjoy. And Daniel Day-Lewis was such a great actor. He is not the problem I have with this film. Not at all. Not in the least. And, you know, and everything he's in, like every scene that he's in, is just magnified because he's so magnetic. And, you know, he's in, so he takes his son to a restaurant. And he's like, oh, we're having steaks and you know, he orders himself a whiskey and a steak and his son a water and a steak. And then he's like, oh, actually, bring me some goat's milk for the boy. And, you know, he's trying to have this kind of just moment with the kid. And then some dudes walk in and he's got to put the showman face back on.
Well, those guys are specifically, he had met with them before around some other deal, and the one guy had talked about his son, and it really pissed off Daniel Day-Lewis. Don't tell me how to parent my kid. He even goes so far as to say, I'm going to go into your house when you're sleeping and slit your throat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's part of the reason he put the show on. He's like, look, I'm a good father. My son is still here. Look, because he cares about how that looks on him.
Yeah, right. And with each passing scene in this film, the movie does a good job of establishing that Daniel Plainview is not a good dude. He is putting on a face for everybody.
Yeah. But it does it in a it guides you there. You don't start there.
Right, right. And it builds you to the moments where you're seeing Daniel Plainview. Not Daniel Plainview the actor or showman. It's like when he decides he's gonna kill the guy who says he's his half brother.
Yeah.
You know, you see that. You see it when he beats Eli. You know, just slaps him around.
When does he slap around? Eli. I thought it was.
Yeah.
Because they establish, like, one of the things they do in the movie to establish that maybe this is a good guy, he has some sort of compass, is his son tells him, hey, Mr. Sunday, the oldest, the patriarch of the family, beats the girl. And he essentially makes that stop. You know, he threatens Mr. Sunday. You don't ever see it, but it's done really well where it's not seen, but you know what's going on. And he never lays a hand on HW either, right? So even when HW's hitting him, he's just patient with him. So there's those things that kind of like maybe he is a good guy.
Well, and there's the scene with HW where they're both laying on the floor, and it's right after HW had lost his hearing. And he's just trying to, I guess, like hum certain sounds to himself.
Yeah.
And Daniel Day-Lewis's character is just like, okay, that's enough. And he's holding him. He's like, he's on the floor with him, and he's holding him. And so it's meant to. I think the movie really wants the viewer to believe that beneath all of this, that Daniel Plainview is trying to be he's trying to be a person that you can rally behind, I guess. And I don't know if the film deliberately tries to do it, but it just lets you down because you're just like, this guy is not a good guy. He's not a redeeming character.
Yeah, there are points of no return late in the film.
And it's the scene, and the point of no return for me at least was the scene with adult HW.
I would push it a little earlier when he kills his brother, but yes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, like, essentially, he kills his half brother, you know, because he's
his fake half brother,
right? He's the guy's trying to essentially steal from him. And so I'm thinking back, okay, this is like late 1800s, early 1900s. Okay, like that shit probably happened quite often. And so that, like, it didn't necessarily bother me, like, storytelling wise, until, you know, we got to like third act of the film, and Plainview is just, he's done with it. He's done with HW. He's done with, you know, he thinks everybody's trying to get over on him.
Yeah, he kind of does, like, one of those things that happens to people when they get older sometimes. They kind of double down on their paranoia, and he does that, you know. His son gets married to that girl that was being beaten by Mr. Sunday.
Yeah.
They're going to move to Mexico and start his own business.
And he's going to start his own business. And then Plainview goes, oh, we're going to be competitors.
That
and
makes you my competitor. He says it like that. It's so good. Like that. And like my competitor.
He and like the poster of this film, is literally Daniel Day-Lewis's face looking like a madman. And by the end of this film, he is 100% a madman. But the transition from, hey, I'm just trying to make money, to, okay, hey, I gotta hold on this business, to, all right, now I'm just this person that is, I'm through being the showman. Now I'm actually gonna show you who I am.
Yeah, all he is at that point is I guess what it comes down to is he's gained the whole world, right? He's got everything he's wanted. And now that that's done, he has nothing, right? Because he has no goal, nothing to move forward. His son is gone. His son is grown and married and living life in a better way than he is, right?
Yeah. And one bit of dialogue that kind of just... It really destroyed my self of enjoyment of watching. And that's not the right word, but took me out. And it's effective dialogue. But his son comes in. HW comes into the room. Adult HW, and the interpreter is sitting at the table, and Plainview sitting.
And the
at
interpreter
table.
Is there because of.
But we don't know that
ASL.
Yet. Right. We don't know that yet. And Plainview goes, HW says, or the interpreter says, hey, he needs to talk to you. And so Plainview goes, all right, I guess flap your hands and get on with it or whatever he says. And I was just like, holy shit, that's mean as fuck.
Yeah, he's your son, and you're making fun of the disability he got working for you.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, I was like, holy shit. That is some of the most vile dialogue directed at somebody I've seen in a film. It's a gut-wrenching scene is because HW's standing there and he's having this conversation through ASL. And just taking the barrage of insults from this man who he calls father, and it's effective as all hell. But I did not enjoy it.
See, here's the thing. I appreciate you saying this, and the reason is because there's a lot of movies, and Boogie Nights is kind of one of them, where a lot of people like it, and the performances are good and strong, and yeah, it's a well-made film. But at the end of the day, I don't like the story. I don't like where these characters end up. And that's enough for me to call it a movie I don't enjoy. The reason I don't like Boogie Nights is just everything just sucks. And it's not going to get any better. And that's the message of the story. But I guess in a lot of ways, that movie and this, it's sort of saying this excess can leave you destitute. Even if you get you know, everything you want, you're still left destitute. But the characters never come to that realization. It's one of the things I don't like about The Wrestler. You know, I think it's a great film, well directed. I don't like Darren Aronofsky much, but that film's good. But at the end of the day, he doesn't learn anything and he's just stuck. And I just kind of like, why did I watch this damn movie?
Well, and you know, this one, there is, you know, the last, so we'll just, you know, get to the end of it here.
I did enjoy this shit, man. So he's always like, the movie starts off with him. He's got a drinking problem. And when he's been drinking, he's really, really hard to wake up. And so this is late in the film and he's drinking heavier than ever. And he's passed out on his own personal bowling alley because he's rich. Now, this movie ends.
And this is in 1927. That's how rich he is.
Yeah. At the
Great Depression. In 1927, he has his own.
So the Great Depression is about to start or is already in full swing. And in comes Eli to visit this guy who's down, right? He's rich. He has everything he wants. He's got a big house. He's got, you know, a butler. He doesn't have to do shit.
And Eli's there for money.
Well, you don't know that. And I didn't know it either, right? So Eli, in the same way where you're not sure where this guy is going, right? And I almost felt like maybe Eli was there to gloat, right?
Yeah.
And because Eli comes in, he's dressed really nice. He's got his cross on and his clergy robes or whatever the heck he's wearing. And he's very much in control of what he's doing. Oh, I see you down. He's almost smug about it. You're down and out. Well, I've got some land to sell you. But
yeah, it's an effective scene. And it's like as soon as that dude said, I've got some land to sell you. And then Daniel Day Lewis picks himself up enough to like
he's like, you bitch, destroys this kid. And then he physically destroys him.
It's a great ending to a weird film. It's because, you know, Daniel Day Lewis tells Eli, bro, your brother already sold me this fucking land.
He says, what you're trying to do now, you're not the smart one. He's trying to get this money. There's a point where Eli is like, give me $5,000. He sort of tricks him into getting it or whatever. But Daniel Day-Lewis never pays up, even when he has all the money. And so now he's like back and he's asking for this money to get, you know, he's going to sell him the thing. Give me the money. I'll sell you this land. And he's like, well, actually, your brother's the smart one. Your brother came in. He worked me, you know, and you remember that scene at the beginning where he negotiates hard. He's like, here's $500. He goes, no, I want $1,000. And then they negotiate up. Right. And it's really good. But then he's like, you are an idiot. You're the worst of two sons. Right. You know, he was the smart one. And then he's like, anyway, it doesn't matter because I was next to your property. All that oil is gone.
Yeah.
It's drained dry.
Yeah. He's like, you know what a drainage is? And he's like, because he's half drunk. And he's like, I put a straw here. And then I run that straw all the way down here. And I just suck it up dry. And it's just, he's so good because he's just like eating up everything as Daniel Day-Lewis as the actor. And he's like, it's all gone. You don't have anything to give me. And then you see Dano's face and he's just like, you know, ghost white. He's, you know, he's been beaten by the man that he hates. Essentially, Daniel Day-Lewis wins. Daniel Plainview wins.
Right.
In the showmanship of the battle of showmen. And then he decides I'm just gonna kill you. And he beats him with a bowling pin.
Yeah, he just murders him outright.
And then the butler,
the movie.
the butler comes in, he goes, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done. And I think he says I'm finished. And
yeah.
Finished in what way? Like, what, I mean, is he going to jail? Or
right.
Is he going to have his butler hide the body? I don't know. But he has nothing left to live for.
No, and it, but it's...
He could have had a son, a daughter-in-law, possible children. He could have helped his son build a business to leave him with generational wealth. But instead, he chose his own.
He didn't care.
Right.
He didn't care about anybody that was in his life. The more we talk about this film, the more I get behind it. It's just something about the way the story was told that I did not enjoy. And it's just, man, Daniel Day-Lewis won an Oscar for this performance. It just, he's so good. He is a generational talent. I think I read that he's retired now, but
that doesn't mean shit. Because what that means is I'm saying I'm retired.
I'm waiting for
the right. And then in 5 years, when the right, and everybody will be, oh, shit, Daniel Day-Lewis is coming out of retirement.
Right. You know? No, it's just, and you know, I love Paul Dano because Paul Dano is unhinged Paul Dano, and that's the best Paul Dano.
He's really, this might be one of my favorite Paul Dano performances. I really like him in this.
He gets to really just let loose and just be this crazy obsessed figure, but like hiding behind, you know, the auspice of religion. And I'm a big Paul Dano fan too. You know, I think the first film I saw him in was Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, same.
And, you know, I just remember enjoying his subdued performance in that film.
He didn't say shit then, in that movie either.
Right. But, like, and then, you know, he just recently played the Riddler and the Batman. And I thought he's really good in that. He's a crazy actor that, you know, with the right roles can be iconic, I think. And so I'm glad he's on the younger side of acting, is because, you know, Hollywood could use more of Paul Dano. But anyways, I'm hesitant to recommend this one.
I'm on the fence too, right? So my thing is, I'm like, like you said, as we talk about it, there's a lot of good here, and there's a lot of things that Paul Thomas Anderson does that I like, where he's showing, not telling. He's allowing you to come up with your own connections, and I like that. I really like a lot of the scenes. All the stuff when Dano and Daniel Day-Lewis are on the screen together is really riveting. Excellent,
but they're not on screen together enough.
There is a lot of digging holes, and there's more good than bad, right? And I get why the movie is as popular as it is and why it won the awards that it did, and I can't say any of that's unfounded. Would I watch it again? Probably not. But at the same time, there's a lot of meat on this bone, so I think for me, I'm gonna recommend it for that, because I think if you watch it, you'll come away with something, and it'll probably be something good, and you'll see some good performances, and it's just a little long in the tooth, I think, is my really only big complaint, is there's some fat on an otherwise meaty steak.
Well, and that's the thing, is that, you know, by the second half of the film, man, you're really, because you've seen Daniel Day-Lewis be unhinged a bit in the role. And so you're like, okay, here's this guy. And then he goes back to being kind of subdued a little bit and putting the showman hat on. And I just, he's very good in this. And it's hard to get past him being so good. Actually, him and Dano being really good. Yeah, fuck it. I'll recommend it too. It is not my favorite recommendation that I've made, but it is such a magnetic tale of, and like the last act of the film just is like just bonkers on the level of why is he so fucking evil? It's all dialogue. It's all dialogue shit. It's not him being the scary guy like Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah,
you know, get that dude, his presence was scary. You know, and it's not a villain where he is just doing just like crazy shit throughout the film. It's the little moments, because he goes from having this bromance with his like half brother on a beach So like literally like 5 minutes later, he's shooting that dude in the head.
Well, that's when he started realizing he was a fake.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But like literally the film wastes no time between those two scenes. And then he throws his son aside and he kind of brings him back and he's very manipulative. And it's just like, I can see why people think that this performance from Daniel Day-Lewis is very iconic. I'm going to recommend it and stop talking.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk myself out of recommending it.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, I like it. Right.
Yeah.
And I think because of our conversations around it, all the stuff that we talk about is deep and there aren't a ton of complaints. My thing is there's just a lot of downtime that doesn't need to be there. But when I think about the movie, I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's definitely a good film. I am more interested in some other, going back and watching some other Paul Thomas Anderson films.
Not me. I'm good. This is not my thing. Right. And
yeah,
the fact that
I
recommended it, I guess maybe tells you just how good it is.
Yeah. So anyways, Jeff, what are we watching next week?
Baby boy. Yeah, I'm so excited. We are watching I Got the Hookup 2 from 2019. I was checking to see if it's rated R. It's not rated. That means that shit went straight to streaming. Oh, we get the return of Black and Blue. We're going to see what antics they've been up to the last 20-something years. Maybe 25 years? I Got the Hookup was 98, and this is 2019, so 21 years later. We'll see what Black and Blue have been up to. I'm excited. There are many things I've been this excited for, but
I'm glad this is one of them.
Like this full circle, you know, thing where like I had teased for so long, I Got the Hookup, and then we watched it and you're like, you know what? It's bad, but it's not that bad. And I was like, shit, that's high praise. And now we're doing this. I'm excited. I'm very excited for I Got the Hookup too.
Are we watching this on Jeff.com?
No, I'm not buying it. It's on various, those streaming channels. You can do a free trial on Amazon, and that's what I'm going to do.
I've got the...
It's on Amazon if you do the free trial of the All Black streaming service. That's what it's called, ALLBLK.
Okay.
That's what it's called. Black cinema.
And as you said that, I got an advertisement for White Man Can't Jump.
Okay.
Which is weird.
Yep.
I didn't even know that was a remake.
Have you ever seen White Man Can't Jump?
Yes, I've seen White Man Can't Jump.
Well, I don't know. It's old. That shit came out in the 90s, right?
Yeah, literally.
You don't watch old movies.
90s is different.
Oh.
90s is my comfort zone.
Okay. Okay. I don't want to hear any shit next time I pick something from the 90s. Anyway.
Hey, what is your guess on the IMDb rating for I've Got the Hookup 2?
28.
Like a 2.8?
Oh, let's just say two stars.
You went low, man. It's got a 3.1 out of 10.
Yeah, and I think from a film, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to hold my tongue because I just want to watch the movie blind.
And it's on the Urban Movie Channel, by the way.
Yeah, there's plenty of places to watch it.
Anyways, we want to thank Mason Pace once again for allowing us to use his music here on the podcast, especially this week. With his song, Mr. Van Gogh, be sure to hit the show notes where you can find all the links to his socials. Throw him a like, a follow, and a subscribe. He's doing big things. I think I saw he's back on tour, so you may see him in your state soon. Jeff.
Hey.
If you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, you can find us at Movie Draft House, where you can throw out some suggestions for themes for the month. You can throw out some suggestions for music for the month. We'll take suggestions. We like them. And if you want to follow Jeff on Twitter, You can find him at Podcast by Jeff and tell him, hey, Jeff, it's fine. You make all the great shit for your chronological podcast, but we like Movie Draft House too. Thanks for doing both.
If you want to get in touch with Mark and recommend a therapist, you can do so at I Heard You Liked on Twitter. We might need couples therapy.
Listen, you know, I get all the therapy I need from Dr. Phil. Okay.
Good God. No wonder you're fucked up. That guy is not a doctor for one. Literally. He does not have a PhD. That guy's a shyster. Fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy. Anyways, Jeff, any words of wisdom?
Here. If you have a milkshake and I have a milkshake and I have a straw, there it is. That's a straw. You see? Watch it. Now my straw reaches across the room and starts to drink your milkshake. I drink your milkshake.
The statues on the shelving are telling me to lie about my way of living, but not that I could die.